You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, today marks 300 days of the COVID-induced lockdown in South Africa. We've experienced one of the most severe sell-offs in market history, with three of the worst trading days recorded historically in March alone, as well as the shortest bear market recorded spanning over just 33 days. And now most markets are sitting at all-time highs. Long, long ago, Sir Isaac Newton gave us three laws of motion, which were the work of genius, really. But Sir Isaac's talents didn't extend to investing. He lost a bundle in the South Sea bubble, explaining later that I can calculate the movement of the stars, but not the madness of men. If he had not been traumatized by this loss, Sir Isaac might well have gone on to discover the fourth law of motion. For investors, returns decrease as motion increases. Bearing this in mind, how are the stars aligning for investors in 2021? And what mad men and women await to throw the world out of alignment? How can investors make the right decisions with the least amount of motion and emotion in their portfolios? As one orange man exits stage left, deplatformed, another enters with his Treasury Secretary, a former Fed chair, using her new platform to advocate big spending. Markets cheer and future generations groan under the weight of increasing debt, and the inflation stars start to twinkle into alignment. Let's welcome our panel to give you an investor's guide to the galaxy in 2021, a user manual for the Raven Crest, if you will. Martin Ackerman, advisory partner and chief economist at Citadel Investment Services. Lisa Mainchies, our independent market analyst in New Zealand. And Deborah Slubber, portfolio specialist at Morningstar Investment Management South Africa. Lisa, firstly, welcome and all the best all the way over there in Aotearoa. I see New Zealand certainly managed to bounce back quite nicely from the COVID crisis. Let's just take the user manual for our little StarCraft a little further. One must obviously identify the drivers of the markets this year. And looking at our instrumentation panel, what are the warning lights? What are the messages that you see now as the Trump era is over?
Well, I think the biggest warning, and totally, is that we do not have Trump in the White House as of a couple of hours from now. There will be a change. There will be shifts. We think we know in which directions they're going. And maybe we can talk about it as the driver or a driver. You have just made an Uber call, and they come back and they say, your driver is Janet. She is driving the Batmobile. And why I say the Batmobile is that some of the ideas that we've been seeing, and they come back even further than her, but largely to Bernanke and others, where negative interest rates are contemplated. And I guess one of the big things as well is that she is well-versed in the ways of the Fed for a long time, knows Jerome Powell well, knows all the other governors well. She's been associated with the Fed since the 1990s and the San Francisco Fed for a good bit of the 21st century. So she's well keyed in to how they will act and operate. So I think that's very synergistic. But by the same token, and I think people must try to understand Janet Yellen as an academic economist and extremely concerned about unemployment, certainly while she was the Fed chair. And I think the same is going to happen now. And she's already said we must hand out this ton of money. And I think a number of people are getting concerned that, you know, the move has been away from Trump pushing the stock market one way or the other as his measure of success to hers, which is unemployment. I don't think it's the same model at all.
And pushing for full employment comes with a price tag. Martin, to bring you in on that point, and that price tag potentially is rising inflation in this world.
Yes, I think we're definitely in a reflation environment. You know, whether we will see the actual numbers this year, that's another debate, if inflation globally goes above 2%. But with everything in the pipeline, you know, I do think we are going to witness inflation soon. And we can ask the question, what is different this time around? You know, in 2008, we also had a lot of unusual monetary policy. We also had quantitative easing. We also had money printing, so to say. This time around, obviously, much more compared to 2008. But I think the one thing that is very different today compared to 2008 is the fact that we're seeing a supply disruption. And maybe it was Trump that started, you know, the feeling towards China with the trade issues. But if you look at surveys around the world now, not only even surveys, but real action, there's many more countries that's now trying to diversify outside of China. And you can just take some of our own clothing retailers in South Africa that's looking for different supply chains, and where they make the point that cost is not the only consideration anymore. So in time, as the world is doing that and you're moving manufacturing away from the cheapest area to maybe something that you think is more reliable, that will introduce supply cost. And I think that is definitely going to make inflation a different story this time around compared to 2008.
And Deborah, I mean, being mindful of cycles and not cyclists here, to keep our little analogy going, and the inference then is that interest rates must rise. What impact might that have on asset allocation?
Yeah, Michael, so that's an interesting point. And as Martin actually alluded to earlier as well, I don't know if inflation is going to be an issue just yet. In 2021, maybe it's something on the cards for a little bit later on, but that does have an impact at the end of the day on interest rates. And interest rates drives asset prices at the end of the day. So we've lived in this environment over the past decade with record low interest rates, and that caused for, in particular, parts of the market that traded on multiples that we haven't seen in history. So a rise in inflation and interest rates at the end just means that asset prices could be influenced as well. And what that could potentially favor is more cyclical stocks as opposed to stocks that are more defensive and growth orientated.
And listen, what impact do you see that having on company valuations? To Deborah's point, we've seen some astronomical valuations, Tesla, for example.
Well, I think that's exactly the point. And part of it is we keep looking at averages in the form of indices. But if you have a look at something like AT&T, which is quite a well-known company in America, it's still on a 7% dividend yield. Now, that may be because they're going to be forced to cut because of problems within the economy. But when you can get a 7% yield, it's difficult to say that that area of the market is expensive. On the other hand, and it is my favorite at the moment, is to refer to a company called Tesla, which produced something like 500 million vehicles out of 500,000 vehicles, sorry, out of 60 million worldwide. And yet it has a market cap bigger than the next five manufacturers, who are all, by the way, producing electric cars. So it's on a price earnings multiple of 1,700. And I think that is absolutely incredible and called an accident waiting to happen. So it will be horses for courses. But remember that Tesla is now in the S&P index, and it will have an effect on the overall price earnings multiple of the index. Just one small company, and it's probably only about 2% of that entire index, but at 1700 PE, it pushes the PE right through the roof. So I do think there are areas to be very concerned about. And certainly one of the things we saw in 2020 was that the beneficiaries of COVID, it was an acceleration. We were going to move to working from home, as we are all now doing on this show. The point being that that was going to happen over time. It was forced upon us much quicker, and people got used to the idea. And Netflix, a big beneficiary as well. So I think, you know, a number of people were beneficiaries of COVID. They were the ones that were running anyway, and they are the ones on high price earnings multiples. If you just want one other example I've got, it's a company called Snowflake, which in January last year went around raising capital, and they valued the firm at $22 billion, never having made a profit. They then decided they would list, and they thought they might get it out at a particular valuation, and it came on at a valuation of something like $88 billion, which is where it is now. That is a rather large company. Never made a profit yet. And does this sound familiar?
That is very frightening, very familiar. Harks back to the dot-com bubble. And there has been something of a rotation as The specter of inflation has raised its head above the parapet. To Martin and Deborah's point, perhaps not here immediately, but the signs are certainly there. And if we start to see interest rates rise, that isn't very good for the growth theme. And we are seeing something of a rotation into value in certain parts of the market. Is it too early, Martin, to call that a big rotation? Is that just some market participants trying to beat the herd?
I think we need to keep in mind that, you know, get back to your question, but we had the Great Depression, then the Great Recession, and I'm calling the current environment the Great Disconnect. So there's a massive disconnect between fundamentals, you know, what's really happening on the ground and what's happening in markets. And part of it is to go back to the Tesla example, you can add to that Bitcoin, and just this massive disconnect between what investors are viewing as value and what is really priced into the fundamentals. So yes, the rotation that we've seen of late into value stocks is part of that. But I do think that, you know, this might not be the beginning of the next cycle. We're still in an environment that's pretty much very, very influenced by central banks. This year is not going to be different. Although we see inflation, potential inflation, that doesn't mean that central banks need to normalize rates anytime soon. I think we're talking about financial repression. The central banks would actually like some inflation while they can still manipulate interest rates at very low levels so that they can afford all the debt that's been piled up over the past couple of years. So this kind of manipulated environment from a policy point of view, I think is going to be with us for a number of years still. And as a result of that, you know, that doesn't pave the way for a full value rotation at this point in time.
Liston, if you look at the road conditions, the investment environment at the moment, what do you see confronting investors under a Biden agenda? What do you see him doing to the global mood? We saw under Trump this deep nationalism, a return to almost a multilateral type of engagement and away from globalization. Do you see Biden trying to undo all of that?
Yes, I do. And I think this is important. I mean, some of it is positive. In other words, we had very much a protectionist, nationalist internal policies under Trump. And now we're going to move back towards one world order, trade liberalization, rejoining many of the communities, such as, you know, the climate, but also looking at the World Trade Organization. So certainly you're going to see a different set of conditions. So again, if you were speeding along the road and it was smooth and a double lane highway, at the very least, it's now a single lane highway. And the road is not in as good a condition. And I think that's exactly what Martin was saying. In fact, I think we can see quite a few bumps if we can't see a rather windy road ahead. And I would actually go as far as to say that your visibility is poor.
Visibility is poor. Martin, would you say visibility is poor at this stage?
I think visibility is always poor. You know, we're in a world where there's rapid changes. There's geopolitics playing out. Even with Biden coming in, you can argue that, you know, it's a softer geopolitical environment. But then in that same week, Kim Jong-un basically fired his sister and he's talking about nuclear again. So all of those things will cause bumps in the road. But I do think for investors specifically, you know, the bottom line of Biden taking over is, yes, probably a little bit more certainty in terms of policy going forward, which is always good for economies and for companies. But I think it all boils down to maybe the fact that he will spend a lot. There will be more debt in the States, and that implies a weaker dollar. So in a softer dollar environment, I think that's what investors need to put in their pipe and say, well, in that environment, where do we see different opportunities maybe going forward compared to an environment where Trump were very much protecting, but also we had a stronger dollar.
And that also feeds into the commodity story that we've seen, Deborah, at the start of the year. hard commodities, soft commodities have been very firm. China set to grow. We saw their GDP out for the fourth quarter beating expectations and set to grow this year between 8 and 9%. In an environment like that, where we see a return to a more rules-based system, a more trade-friendly system, that's also supportive of commodities. How does that factor into asset allocation for investors in 2021?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So Martin mentioned the softer dollar, and I think that's generally the consensus around investors. At Morningstar, we don't spend any time trying to forecast currencies. But if you look at the underlying fundamentals, it does point to softer dollar, plus the fact that Biden is more world or more trade friendly, potentially good for emerging markets, and South Africa would be a direct beneficiary of that, and also good for commodities. So from an asset allocation point of view, lots of opportunities still within commodities, within emerging markets, and selected developed markets. For instance, in the UK, that's a lot more energy focused. There's also some interesting asset allocation possibilities on that side.
And there are other ways to play that rather than just going into electric vehicle makers like Tesla. You can get access to lithium plays directly. It's a very interesting ETFs around that that investors can consider. Listen, let's look at some of the contrarian views, or what could go wrong here. What is the chance of the market overheating in an environment like this, or a little StarCraft overheating? Cars never really overheat anymore, but is this still possible in an environment like this, where we see all of this liquidity in the system and we see markets really running up very hot on the back of that?
Well, I think that's exactly where I was heading previously. Certain areas of the market are extremely hot. We have IPOs in initial placement offerings coming to market, 100 in the United States last year, and they're coming on at astronomical valuations compared to any kind of profitability. So you already have overheating. There's no question. People don't list their company unless they see a good reason for selling at a price that they couldn't imagine 6 months ago. So all I'm saying is that the danger signs are there. The second danger sign is in the form of Robin Hood. And what I'm really saying is a lot of unsophisticated investors are rushing into the market. And the reason they're doing that is they get nothing on their money in the bank.
Yeah.
They say, what else can I buy? And they say bonds, and you're getting 1% on bonds. Well, I'll take my chances. And lo and behold, and again, it's one of those momentum-driven things, where without doubt, people are following a trend and it's going up. So, of course, it's going to carry on up. I've seen this in markets before, and I think we all know how that ends.
Yeah, the greater fool.
I don't say when.
You're not calling the end, but one does worry when you see all of these Robin Hood traders and the greater fool theory does spring to mind. How does an investor deal with all of this? There's some poor visibility, some bumps on the road, a major geopolitical transition happening, and there's a lot of noise effectively in the system. If you're driving along, what do you make of all of this noise? Do you stop the car? Do you look under the hood? Do you just forge ahead? Give us a framework to help deal with all of this.
I think, if I just stick to our investment philosophy, it's based on four very simple pillars. The one is to say that the future is uncertain and will surprise. So how do you manage that risk? And that, I guess, is not to only have one view, but always test your view in terms of what if something else happens. The other one is to be value sensitive. So I'm not saying being a value investor, but never overpay for an asset. And this environment where we are right now, there's definitely asset classes that's a little bit stretched. But I think the golden rule is a thing about diversification, making sure that you don't put all the eggs in one basket, and asset allocation. So I think where we are right now, my advice to any investor before we really talk about specific opportunities is to make sure that you're well diversified, you include a lot of opportunities, and very importantly, don't get too emotional. Don't check the car every second. If the temperature is fine, it's probably fine until something breaks. Mm-hmm. You don't need to check that temperature meter every day, because that starts to create emotions and you do the wrong thing at the wrong time. And especially in times like this, I think most investors tend to overlook at their portfolios and then trade too much and in the end destroy a lot of the opportunity and the value. Mm-hmm. So, simple diversification and don't watch the volatility on a daily basis.
It comes back to my introductory remarks about Newton's fourth law of investor returns decreasing as motion increases, Deborah. But it's a human condition. We are, you know, markets are maddening things because they're driven by emotion and not just the fundamentals. How are the biases going to be impacting investors this year? What do we need to be aware of in order to keep those biases in check?
Michael, I always think that your emotions when it comes to investing, that's absolutely the worst advisor that you can think of. So investing is supposed to be counterintuitive, and it always is. So I think the first thing is when it comes to these biases, so take the lessons that everyone learned from 2020 and try to apply that again. So be aware of your own personal biases, whether it's fear or flight or whatever it may be aware of it and try to think about 2020 and what we've learned there about markets, how incredibly difficult it is to predict markets and how difficult it is to time markets. So no one could foresee how quickly it was going to sell off, how quickly it was going to recover. So I think the big thing there is just remain invested. If you've got a long-term investment strategy, stick to it, and don't let your emotions get the better of you. Better to just walk away, bury your head in the sand, and don't look at your investments until months after.
Yeah, don't look at those quarterly investor statements. Can really be frightening if you look at what happened in March, how quickly the markets bounced back. No one could have foreseen that, really. Liston, what are you seeing real people do here with real money? What is the smart money, so to speak, doing right now?
Well, again, I'm not sure that the pricing in the markets is being done by smart people. That was my point about Robin Hood. The second part is that there's an awful lot of index investing, so people are buying the top of the market. They're forced to do that with every new money that comes in. And, that does lead to the fact that the top of the market is going to carry on up while there is big inflows. So it's a question of watching the money flows. But what I prefer to say to people is, look, if you're going to buy something, have a reason. Understand what it is that you're buying. Now, many people rely on their investment managers to do that. But so, for instance, you know, if you look at something like iron ore and you keep watching and listening to the news, you'll find that iron ore is having quite a good time. Yeah, and there are various problems and whatever else, but it's doing well. The same thing. But you don't want to be in coal because there's total movement against anything related to fossil fuels. If you look at energy, we had an amazing situation last year, which was probably unrepeatable. But again, you have to look at how you're going to approach it. So I always say try to find those companies that have a tailwind rather than a headwind.
And there are going to be many if you look into future industries with significant tailwinds in the ESG space. That certainly seems to be where the world is heading under Joe Biden. When I said what is the smart money doing, I should have been a little bit more specific. What are the insiders doing? Not the Robin Hood traders. What are the insiders doing at the moment?
Again, what I'm tending to find here is that most of them are trend following. So when a company has done well, there are still a lot of institutional investors that operate on the basis of not buying a company when its momentum is poor. They wait until the momentum turns positive. They like to know that there are other people in there with them. And I think this has been actually a trend, not from COVID or anything else, but for quite a long time. And it's certainly the one that the amateur investors have got hold of. So again, the idea would be, I think, the number of them are saying it's already too much. We're looking at, as I mentioned before, certain areas of the market that have absolutely done whatever dash they're going to do. So again, but I haven't got a feel that there's a universal consensus on that. The contrarian players, and some of them are called value players, but the guys who go about the business find companies that they say will have quite a good time. But you must understand technological change is such that, you know, something that was a favorite maybe 5 years ago may not be a favorite now. And I always point to the well-known company called Nokia, which at one time was the stock to own.
Can you recall the old Nokia 3310, which they tried to relaunch with Snake on it, something of a damp squib. But things can certainly change, much like they can change in the EV market with battery technology changing all the time. Who knows which is the mineral of the future in that space? So do your research, go and Google, and also speak to the professionals when it comes to getting your StarCraft serviced, I think, is the message in that. Lister Mainsheese, our independent investment analyst, Martin Ackerman, advisory partner and chief economist at Citadel Investment Services, and Deborah Slubber, portfolio specialist at Morningstar Investment Managers, with your trip through the galaxy of investments in 2021.